You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, all right. All right, so here we are. Living it day by day, you are a superstar. And he says what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we chat about TNA's Bound for Glory, Jeff Hardy, Ryback, Kofi Kingston, and much more. Now, my name is David, and I'm joined today not just by my good friend Alex, but also by our guest panelist, Todd Martin. Todd, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Pleasure to be on.
And Alex, always good to have you.
Well, thank you very much, David.
Hey, listen, by the way, before we get started, we should wish Alex a happy birthday today.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Indeed. Happy birthday, Alex.
This is where we're supposed to insert something about another year older, another year wiser, or something kind of smart like that, right? So, Todd, before we start, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Jeez, I don't know. I write about wrestling and MMA in a bunch of different places, so you can check me out at WrestlingObserver.com if you're looking for some more wrestling discussion.
Excellent. Well, great to have you on the program. We have a lot of great wrestling to discuss today, so what do you think? Should we get started?
Let's ring the bell. TNA Wrestling. So D-Von is our first member of Aces and Eights that have been revealed. Are you excited that D-Von and the crew are back in the building? Todd, what were your thoughts when D-Von was revealed to be the first member of Aces and Eights?
I wasn't a big fan of it in the sense that I felt like D-Von had sort of been slotted at a certain level in TNA, and with Aces and Eights, I felt like the first reveal should have been someone that felt like more of someone important rather than someone that isn't really viewed as someone that's particularly important. With that said, I mean, he certainly fits within the story they're telling, which is that, you know, it's a bunch of guys that are sort of outsiders that are disgruntled with the way that the company's going, and D-Von has a perfect storyline explanation fitting into that based on the fact that, you know, he was let go from the company, he had the TV title, but, you know, they vacated and gave it to someone else. So that fit in perfectly with what they're doing, and I think he's a logical member of the group. But as far as a first reveal, he wouldn't be my choice for sort of a first person to put out there.
I agree with you, Todd. I think D-Von certainly does fit into the story. David, what are your thoughts as far as, you know, would the D-Von thing had been a little bit more important if the fans maybe were a little bit more into the storyline?
Well, maybe if they'd been a little more surprised. I do like the fact that it does make sense. It is logical, as Todd mentioned there, because so much in pro wrestling is illogical. That I thought that it was nice from the sense that there was a story, you know, a backstory that fit there. So for me, it was okay. I'm not a huge fan of his, but I thought it was okay.
Now, they have access to the building. How much longer do you see this going on, Todd? Do you believe that this will go all the way to lockdown, where they'll do the traditional War Games match? Or do you think TNA will be inclined to kind of pull the plug a little bit earlier? Hulk Hogan has done media saying that he's in love with this angle.
Yeah, I keep hearing that they're very pleased with it, and they've still got a long way to go. So I think we're going to be seeing Aces and Eights for quite a while to go. And I think lockdown is probably a pretty good bet for a big payoff match, although I could also see them changing their mind before that, because they've done that before where they've sort of gotten tired with a certain thing that they were planning for a long time and then switched to something else. But I think if you're putting an over and under on sort of the big climax, and it'll probably wind down a little bit afterwards, but if you're talking about sort of the peak of the whole thing, I think lockdown's a pretty good bet.
Now, David, there's a lot of interesting free agents, I guess, available. John Morrison, for example. Is there any name that I guess can be revealed next, David, that would get you particularly excited?
I wanted to comment quick on what you guys were talking there about the timeliness of how long this is going to play out. I think it's interesting that we now try to estimate that. I don't remember that as a kid growing up. You know, I kind of just enjoyed the stories, but now it is like, well, they're going to carry this out to lockdown, or how far they're going to go, what's the payoff going to be. I think it's different in how wrestling stories are told today that we think that way. But John Morrison, I always thought was very talented with the right story. He'd be fine. Do you like him, Alex?
Yeah, actually, I don't know if John Morrison would necessarily fit in this particular storyline, but I think John Morrison would be an excellent addition to TNA's roster. What do you think about John Morrison and TNA, Todd?
I'm not a big fan of him, but I think that he's a pretty good wrestler. I think he's sort of lacking in personality, but he's been trying so long in WWE, in my opinion, to be something that he's not with the John Morrison gimmick. I feel like if they had sort of repackaged him and tried to let him be more whatever direction he wanted to be, and I don't even know what that is, but to try to sort of be himself, I think that he might be able to connect better with fans and potentially get over it. I mean, he's got between the look and the wrestling ability, there's some potential there, but I don't think he's put it together yet. And as far as TNA, I agree with your basic inclination, which is if you're going to bring him in, Aces and Eights probably isn't the best fit.
TNA Impact this Thursday presenting you John Morrison as he wants to be. What is next for Jeff Hardy and Austin Aries after the pay-per-view? These two guys headlined, and Jeff Hardy won the world title from Austin Aries. We've seen Austin Aries do a little bit of a character shift these past few weeks on television where he's noticeably outright being a heel as compared to his face character, I guess, that had heelish tendencies. Todd, do you have any ideas or thoughts on where you would like to see Jeff Hardy and Austin Aries go from here?
Well, Jeff Hardy, obviously he's got his contract coming up at the beginning of the new year, so the big question is whether he's going to re-sign with TNA or potentially look to go back to WWE, and I think that'll be an interesting thing to follow. I mean, WWE, I think they need as much help as they can get because they're running so much programming right now, and Jeff Hardy would be immediately one of their bigger stars, but he does have the strikes from before, and there's a WWE TNA lawsuit, which has led to them not wanting to hire people that they wanted to hire, like Ric Flair, because they're waiting for that to turn out. So Jeff Hardy is sort of an interesting predicament. I could see him potentially still going to WWE. If he's stuck around with TNA, I think they'll probably give him a little bit of a run with a title here, but I don't see him necessarily holding the belt for a long period of time because he doesn't really need the title as much as other people. And as far as Austin Aries go, he's in sort of a tricky position in that I like Aries a lot as a performer. I think he's one of the very best people they have in TNA, if not the best, as an overall package in terms of having wrestling ability, mic ability, charisma. But they've sort of – I don't like a lot of rapid-fire turns, and I was sort of not that high on turning him face in the first place because I think he's more of a natural heel. But sort of turning him face and then turning him back heel with sort of the same tendencies that make him kind of a face anyway, I don't know how fans are going to react to him going forward. I think it's possible they're just going to sort of cheer him either way, which could lead to them turning him back face again, which is really you're sort of getting in the, sort of the danger zone as far as not getting people to follow the character. So Austin Aries is tricky. I'm not sure which way he'll go from here.
Well, to follow on your Jeff Hardy point, it is interesting that he may go back to WWE, but it seems like he's really got some traction now in TNA, and I like him there. I hope they keep him strong as champion, and I think he really fits there right now. As a big WWE fan, I'm not ready to see him come back. And you're right, he'd be a big star again when he was there, but I think he's doing fine. I'd like to see them keep him strong. Alex, do you think he's a better fit in TNA?
You know, what's interesting is that actually I don't. I don't feel like TNA is in a weird predicament, the way I feel like when the big stars such as Jeff Hardy come to the company, I feel like they oftentimes get devalued as compared to when they're in World Wrestling Entertainment. And I don't think Jeff Hardy's really meant much to the company, even though he is very popular, but it's not like he's really raised their profile or made the shows any more important. Now, Todd, you brought up the TNA lawsuit with World Wrestling Entertainment. It seems like this thing's been going on for the better part of a year. But, Todd, how long do you think this thing can continue to go on?
Oh, lawsuits can drag on for years. So, I mean, it's just a matter of the two sides either having the will to continue on or deciding, hey, we're just better off settling at some point. And I think probably both sides would prefer to just get a settlement done where WWE gave TNA some sort of payment and TNA let them move on and bring in the guys that they wanted to. So I think you're probably looking at a settlement at some point in the next 4 to 5 months. But as far as how long the thing could drag on, it could drag on indefinitely.
Now, if Jeff Hardy were to return to World Wrestling Entertainment, this guy's a former world champion, is there anything you'd be interested in seeing him do in World Wrestling Entertainment, particularly any interesting feuds or anywhere for his character to go that we haven't seen him go already?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head where I'm watching WWE programming now and thinking, that'd be fantastic if Jeff Hardy were back in the mix. I mean, I'm sure they could come up with something, but I haven't really missed him since he's left. I thought he was fine. He's just never been my favorite, I think, because a lot of his locker room issues, I don't trust him to be there for the long term. So at this point, I think, I think he's fine in TNA. I'm glad he got this win over Austin Aries, but I think that's where he should stay.
Joey Ryan is finally getting his opportunity with a national company. And yes, I know he was with Rural WSX, the prior MTV company. But of the bigger promotions, this is Joey Ryan's first opportunity. What are our thoughts on TNA's eye and talent? Will Joey thrive in the bigger stage? What's interesting is that, Todd, I was there live for a lot of Pro Wrestling Guerrilla events, and I feel like I really saw the growth and development of Joey Ryan, not only as a character, but as a performer. But what's interesting, and I'll be honest, I didn't expect Joey when he was on television, he didn't really appear to, I guess, belong. Todd, am I far off, or do you understand where I'm coming from?
No, I completely agree. I think that in PWG, it's a smaller promotion. It has a lot of comedy, a lot of sort of wacky characters, and Joey Ryan could sort of be a crazy douchebag character in there, and it sort of fit with what PWG was doing. And it was sort of a change of pace in the middle of the card, where it wasn't as good of a wrestling match as some of the other stuff, but they had tons of good wrestling, so sort of some character there. And in TNA, I don't really see what he adds. I mean, there's already a lot of characters up and down the card. I don't think he's an above-average wrestler by TNA standards. I don't have anything against Joey Ryan. I mean, he's a fine guy to have around, but I don't really view him as being a major league talent. So I don't really foresee him having a lot of success in TNA, frankly.
Yeah, it's interesting because Joey was around a lot of times in World Wrestling Entertainment. He's done, I remember one incident in particular where he wrestled Big Show before WrestleMania in the build-up to the Floyd Mayweather match, where he took Big Show's WMD, as it's now called. Now, David, you hear a lot about independent talent. Are you impressed with any of the guys that TNA has been given opportunities to via their gut check or any of the new talent they've brought in?
Well, one of the things that we've talked a lot about on this show is the need for TNA to kind of think outside the box. And I love the fact when they take chances on guys. I think they have to do it. Make it, kind of mold them into their style and introduce them into their programming. I think the problem is you just don't know how someone's going to translate into a different promotion. It could be backstage politics. It could be they don't put them in the right storyline. So when we think, are they going to thrive in a certain setting? We don't know. Look at when Karma went to the WWE, for example. I thought she was going to make a big impact and be a big player, and for a million different reasons, it just all fizzled out. I don't know. Alex, you seem to like Joey Ryan. You think that he's got a shot here?
Well, I agree on the same lines with Todd, only because of his recent performances. I mean, he's not really a standout yet on television, but maybe he'll grow into his boots a little bit, per se, and kind of see the level that's expected. And a name that comes to my mind when I think of someone like Joey Ryan is another name like Roderick Strong. I think Roderick Strong is a very talented performer, and he's had opportunities with companies via tryouts, and a company hasn't exactly bid on him yet either. If you've seen Roderick, he does have limitations. Todd, do you ever think that another guy will get an opportunity like this in TNA, like a Roderick Strong?
I think there will be other people that will come along and get chances in TNA. I don't know about Roderick Strong, which I feel bad about, because I think Roderick Strong is a very talented performer. I think he's a very good wrestler. But Strong, to me, is the guy that WWE thinks of when they think of indie guys, where they have this image of indie guys that are kind of bland, kind of vanilla. They're very good wrestlers, but they don't have a lot of personality. They don't project in a way that would get them over on the national stage. And the irony of that belief is I think it's completely wrong. Like, from Claudio to Chris Hero to CM Punk to Danielson, there have been a ton of guys on the independent level that are very talented. And I understand where you're coming from in terms of saying you can't necessarily project, but I think I disagree with you on that one. I think that a lot of these guys, it's quite projectable to see how well they do if you watch a lot of them on the indies. And some guys are well suited towards being big time stars in the national stage, and some guys aren't. And I feel bad saying it, but I think Strong's one of the guys that isn't.
Oh, and just to follow up on that, my point being that sometimes they get into the situation and it may be something outside of their talent that kind of holds them down, or, they might be putting the right storylines for them, and that could be the problem.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you've got to find the right fit for everyone, and there have been tons of guys that have come along over the years that had a lot of talent, but they got the wrong gimmick, or they got the wrong push, or whatever it was. I mean, the famous example that people point to is Terry Taylor was a guy that was very well thought of leading into going to WWF, and Kurt Hennig was another guy that was also highly valued. Before they came into WWF, they were probably viewed as relatively comparable prospects. You know, maybe Kurt Hennig was a slightly better prospect. They were both guys that were thought of quite highly, and they came in, and Kurt Hennig became Mr. Perfect, and Terry Taylor became the Red Rooster. And, you know, the paths went in completely different directions at that point. And if they'd switched them around, and Terry Taylor had been Mr. Perfect, and Kurt Hennig had been the Red Rooster, who knows how things would have turned out.
And before we move on to the segment, I have one more point I'd like to make. I think we all three can agree that the showcasing of Tony Anthony as Teal Hopper was totally not the right way to introduce him to a national audience.
I've been saying that for years, and people always look at me funny when I say that. I thought, you know, if you package that guy as Dirty White Boy in WWF, that would have gotten over huge. Shawn Michaels, Dirty White Boy, SummerSlam, I was all for it, but, you know, they had different ideas.
You could have headlined in Kentucky, it would have been big money.
Oh, my God, in Kentucky, in Kansas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, there are some big games to be had.
World Wrestling Entertainment. With Raw's ratings sliding in recent weeks, Vince McMahon has injected himself back into the programming. Can Vince move the needle anymore? Alex, I come to you first, and I'm interested in what you have to think about Vince McMahon being a bigger part of Monday Night Raw.
I love it. I mean, Vince McMahon is one of the attitude characters that has kind of gotten better with age, I guess. I mean, he still is able to harken back to the old catchphrases that he used to use. Anytime Vince comes on the show, it feels a little bit more special. I remember being live in Richmond, Virginia, when he came out for the introduction of the Tough Enough winner, when they crowned Andy Levine as the winner. And such a throwaway segment, but just Vince and Austin being in the ring made it feel so much more important. You know, and Vince isn't used a lot, but whenever he is used, I feel like it's an important moment.
Yeah, Todd, would you agree? I mean, you think that Vince still can make the WWE seem more important in the storylines he's in?
I think he does. I think that, and I mean, you can see that in the ratings, and I think you can see that in the interest it picks up when he goes in there, because he's one of the guys, along with, you know, Austin, Rock, Undertaker, that are associated with a different era when things were, in general, better. And so Vince McMahon coming back is something that tends to garner people's attention. With that said, I'm not as big a fan of Vince at this stage of his career as Alex is, in the sense that I feel like at this point Vince should be in there primarily to get other people over, and it feels like whenever Vince comes back, it's to get himself over rather than the performers. And you saw it with CM Punk, where he was, you know, basically fighting even with this guy that's your, you know, world champion, and he's, you know, a senior citizen who was never an athlete. And then you saw it, I mean, another perfect example is what Alex brought up with what was very, you know, a very entertaining segment, but, you know, what was that guy, Silent Rage it completely buried him. And granted, I mean, he sucked, but, I mean, it still buried him pretty bad.
Vince does look, he's starting to look old, isn't he? I mean, really old.
Yeah, he's old.
Yeah, he is. I have a real soft spot for him because I've always, you know, been a big WWF fan now. And I find him really interesting as a behind-the-scenes guy and in the ring, but I think it's time now where he doesn't bring himself back like this, because then when he's not around, I think sometimes I feel like, well, this isn't quite as important. Because when he comes in every now and again, it's for me, I'm conflicted. I do like him, but I'd be okay if he wasn't there anymore. And I think you make a great point there, Todd. All of a sudden he's in a match with CM Punk, going toe-to-toe with him.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of when you bring him back, yes, you get returns from him, but it also, then when he leaves, there is, you know, it takes away from the program. It feels like, oh, we've, you know, the real star had come back, and now we're going back to the regular guys, and it doesn't feel as important. That's something an issue they've had with WrestleMania the last few years, where they bring in the big stars to WrestleMania, mm-hmm. and then it feels like after WrestleMania, because they put so much into WrestleMania that, you know, it's sort of the B crew, and that's another risk that you run with Vince.
What's interesting is I think both of you guys are going to hate the direction I go in the next segment. But, yes, I do agree with the fact that Vince McMahon did get a lot of offense on CM Punk and Paul Heyman, and that's the world champion. And for that matter, any performer, Vince McMahon shouldn't get an extraordinary amount of offense on. But I still believe, like I said earlier, and I think both of you guys agree, that Vince McMahon does, even though he is kind of the king of the PG era, I mean, this is his baby in a sense, but, I mean, he does remind the fans of the Attitude Era, the edgier era, that a lot of fans and a lot of performers, Dave Bautista, for example, wish that the company would go back to.
CM Punk will defend his WWE Championship at Hell in a Cell versus Ryback, a match that actually gets me excited. But are they rushing Ryback into the spotlight? Todd, is this too soon to have Ryback in this type of match?
I don't know about too soon in the sense that I don't know how far he can develop to where he would fit into this sort of thing and would necessarily go that well. I mean, to me, the problem with Ryback is that he's not that good of a performer overall. I don't want to completely write him off because I do think that he has a physical charisma about him that some of the guys that Vince has chosen over the years don't have. I think there is something in terms of that charisma, but he's a bad wrestler. He's not a good talker at all. And you haven't seen him talk in the course of being Ryback, but he would talk during his NXT days and before that. And he was not a good talker at all. So, I mean, he would have needed to improved a lot since then without really any practice in order to have been an average talker in the business right now. To me, he just comes across as a throwback to the era where Vince would push the muscle guys that, you know, didn't really have a lot going for them other than big muscles. And I don't think big muscles intrigue people now the way that they once did. So when it comes to Ryback, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's an issue of rushing. I think it's just an issue of talent selection. If you gave this sort of push to a guy with a lot more talent, I think you'd get a lot bigger returns.
How about you, Alex?
And this is where I was going with the last segment, is that Ryback is getting the opportunity at Hell in a Cell against CM Punk, and I'd rather have seen that opportunity go to Vince McMahon, and let me explain why. Is that, well, first of all, I mean, it could be, this pay-per-view, for all intents and purposes, is not one of the major shows of the year. Right. So it's not exactly like this was going to blow away the doors buy rate-wise. And secondly, is that we could lead toward a Ryback CM Punk match at Survivor Series. I hear a lot of rumblings on the internet like this is way too early. There's more to come from this character, but not really. I don't understand why the investment in Ryback can't be for a 6-month storyline where he gets the world title shot, he finally gets beaten by the champion, whatever, and then he begins the descent down the mid card. I mean, we see so many guys so often get these start and stop pushes. What's wrong with giving a guy a little 6-month run where he's legitimately pushed, given an opportunity, and then he's moved down the cards?
Well, is there any chance that Ryback actually wins this match and gets the title here at this pay-per-view? Todd, I mean, do you think he has a chance to actually win this match?
Absolutely. I mean, I think they like Ryback a lot, and I think they're going to be very much tempted to put the title on him. Will they? I'm not sure. I mean, I view it as something of a toss-up, honestly, between a screwjob finish or a Punk winning or a Ryback winning. I wouldn't be surprised to see any of those scenarios, so I don't rule that out in the slightest.
I have to admit that I am more interested to see Ryback versus CM Punk than to see Big Show in another championship match. I mean, I like Sheamus, but I'm just, you know, I respect Big Show, but he's certainly not making me call my cable operators.
Absolutely. I think that this match is more interesting than a lot of matches, and people point to it not being a very good wrestling match, but I definitely am more intrigued by a match where you've got really a lot of doubt about which way they're going to go, and you've got a guy that's really been protected going up for the title. I think it's an interesting show, and I think it'll do well on pay-per-view.
And I think his popularity is undeniable. I mean, Ryback, you know, a lot of people accredit to whatever, but I don't believe that you can give anyone this type of push and to have the same success. I mean, just a few months ago, we were questioning whether the wins over Jinder Mahal and Heath Slater were going to be enough to get this character over, and it seems to have. Ryback has something in this role at this time that is getting him popular with the fans, and I believe that this is a very intriguing match, not only for what the finish will be in particular, but just for the actual spectacle, I guess, of the thing, to see the Ryback against CM Punk.
I never thought I'd hear the words wins over Jinder Mahal and Heath Slater. You know, those were big wins, but Kofi Kingston won the Intercontinental Championship during the taping of Main Event on Tuesday night. The news was all over the internet well in advance of the show's broadcast. Are you surprised the title was changed this way? Alex, I thought this was kind of shocking. Now, I know they want to make Main Event a big show during the week, but this was surprising to me.
Yeah, I especially found it surprising because I don't know where Kofi Kingston was ranked in the top 10 of Intercontinental title contenders. But seriously, Kofi Kingston is starting his new singles push, and they want to involve him in a program with The Miz. And it was surprising, but I think it was the right thing to do, I guess. I think we'll continue to see matches between these two guys throughout the rest of the fall and the winter.
I just think it's surprising because they do have the live show every week where you can have that shock value on Monday night. But, I mean, Todd, do you think this is the kind of thing that establishes Main Event as a must-see every week, or are people going to eventually tune this out because it's not live like Monday Night Raw?
I think that's certainly the idea, and that's why I wasn't particularly surprised by it, because it's something they want to do. They want to establish this Main Event show, and having a title shot is one of the ways to tell people, hey, this is something that you should check out. This is something that's important.
The matches have been pretty good. I mean, the main events that I've seen, they give these guys 20 minutes or whatever. I think the longer matches have been pretty good. What do you guys think in terms of the quality of wrestling you've seen on Wednesday nights?
I think the show has been fine, but, I mean, quite frankly, I'm not a big supporter of having additional programming just out of selfishness of my schedule. I mean, I follow a lot of other sports, and also I like a lot of other television shows on TV, and so it's very easy for me to give up a show like Main Event to where I might watch one match, but I'm not going to invest myself in the entire show knowing that angles have progressed on Monday Night Raw.
Well, it's good you're only going to watch one match. There's only two on the show, so. You're all in, Alex, whether you like it or not, pretty much. But, you know, it's interesting to see Kofi Kingston, you know, now moved out of the tag team scene, given the Intercontinental Championship. I think they can still elevate him. He's been kind of in that malaise for a long time. Todd, does he have a big future with WWE, or has he hit his ceiling, do you think?
I hope that he hasn't hit his ceiling, because I kind of like him as a performer. I'm kind of with you on that. But he's been around for so long that it's a tough sell at this point. And a few years ago, I sort of introductory thoughts on this. Like, for a while, I viewed Kofi Kingston as just sort of a mid-card comedy figure. Well, not really even a comedy figure, but sort of a mid-card baby face that, you know, people liked but didn't have a lot of upward potential. And then he had that feud, I think it was with Orton. It might have been someone else. But I think that they really... I think they've really made an effort there to try to get him over, and I thought that he was really working there. He cut some promos that I thought were very good. He had, you know, a really exciting match. I think it might have been in Madison Square Garden, where he brawled all over the place with Randy Orton. I felt like he was getting over, and then they just gave up on him. And at this point, it's now, you know, 3 or 4 years later. People view Kofi Kingston in a certain way. I don't know how much there really is to be gained from him at this point, given how long he's been at that role, but I still feel like there's something there if they gave him the full opportunity.
I just like the fact that he's not walking around with R-Truth anymore, looking at an invisible child, you know, as he walks down to the ring. I like the serious characters, and I agree. I think he's a great actual quote-unquote wrestler, but again, Alex, is his time come and gone? I mean, like, John Morrison is left for a while. If John Morrison came back, maybe that would feel fresh for Kofi.
You know, what's interesting is that, you know, Kofi sometimes turns in performances that really make you think, like, wow, this guy's really good in the ring. But then sometimes he turns in performances that make me question if he is any good in the ring. You know, I think that might be part of the reason for the hot and cold start with Kofi Kingston. I mean, we can remember the match on Raw where Randy Orton was audibly angry with the way the match was going with Kofi, and he was verbally chewing him out in the ring. So that might be part of the reason why Kofi is slotted where he is. And I'm a fan, I guess, overall of Kofi, but I definitely think he has his limitations.
Wild card topic.
All right, so I got a competition for you guys here. So here's how it's going to work. I like games, so I'm going to pit you two against each other, and we'll see who can win this. And what this game is it is a guess that ring entrance competition. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a lyric from an entrance song of a wrestler, and you have to try to guess who that wrestler is. And what I'll do, I've got six of them, so we'll go through three rounds. I'll give it to each of you guys. One of you will have a chance to get it. If you don't get it, the other guy can steal it and take the point instead. So are we good to go?
Good to go.
All right, so I'll go to you first, Alex. here's the lyric, and it starts a little bit easier, gets a little bit harder. From Montreal to Memphis, parlez-vous français?
The Rougeau brothers.
There you go. Alex, you go. So you got 1 point there, Alex. And going to you, David, you never hear the shot that takes you down.
This is the easy round? Oh, boy. I'm going to say I don't know.
All right, going to you, Alex.
The Rifleman, which was a very not very well-known gimmick of Barry Windham in 89.
No, it is not the Rifleman. That is, in fact, Drew McIntyre's theme at the very beginning there. All right, so no points there. Going back to Alex. Britney Spears is kind of cute.
I don't know.
I'm going to jump in and say three count.
Yes. The steal there for David. So you've tied it up there. The next one here. And going back to you, David, here. And a little bit harder here. Only wrestler that's not hard to understand.
Huh. Well, in the interest of time, I'm going to say I don't know. I don't have time to Google it quick enough.
Going back to you, Alex, if you could steal it.
William Regal?
No, it is, in fact, Ricky Steamboat, the Family Man.
Wow.
All right, and going back to, it was Alex here. And actually, good for Alex, because you're more of an indie guy here. Well, I just gave you a clue there. Flawless offense done with precision.
Flawless offense done with precision. The name that instantly comes to mind is Low Key, but I don't assume that's correct.
No, that's not correct. That is Chris Hero's theme song.
Don't get a chance to steal?
I'm sorry, I cut you off there. I screwed up the game. Did you know that one?
Not at all.
Okay.
Because you're going to say Big Show. I don't think that was...
All right, and final one here. In case you don't know it, we have to go to a bonus round here. A little bit more of an obscure one. You're the rainbow I prayed I'd find.
I'm going to say Billy and Chuck.
It's actually a good guess, but no, that's not it.
Three count.
Three count's not a love today.
That is, in fact, Bertha Fay's theme song, sung by the inimitable Harvey Whippleman. So, do you guys want to take the tie, or do you want to go to a bonus round?
I don't want to tie. This isn't hockey.
All right, so one more for sudden death. I guess I'll, anyone can jump in here.
Okay.
Need a second to think about it here. He'll steal your love, break your heart, and leave you a fool. That was Ravishing Rick Rude.
Oh, God.
All right, here we go. One more. Tiebreaker. Walking disasters, total destruction.
Demolition.
There you go. I don't know who said that, but whoever did is the winner.
David said that.
Well, Alex, you've been bested by David.
Yeah, theme music isn't my particular cup of tea. I didn't even know Drew McIntyre had lyrics to a song. I usually audibly mumble during his entrance music, so.
Yes, well, an uninspired performance by you, Alex. I'm not impressed by your performance.
I didn't know the Rick Rude one. I remember him, of course, when he did the stripper kind of entrance with WWF at the time, but never heard that Rick Rude one.
Yeah, that was his WCW theme, actually his second WCW theme, because in WWF he didn't have any lyrics with his, and then his first WCW theme didn't have lyrics, but then he came with the Simply Ravishing song, which did have lyrics.
Good stuff. I like that. We had a lot of names and songs from the past there, so thank you for putting that together.
No problem.
So, hey, listen, Todd, it's been great having you on the show. Now, normally this is where Alex and I wrap up, but anything on your mind you want to get off your chest before we close out?
I was just reading tonight before we got on the air here, ESPN had their new NBA preview. And, like, I get that there are a bunch of different metrics that people are trying to use, but to me, before you reveal your predictions based on numbers, you should have, the numbers ironed out. And this thing was just a disaster. It had the Nuggets with, a 33% chance or something of winning the NBA title. It had them first in the West. It had the Timberwolves third in the West. It had, the Pacers second or something in the East. It was just a crazy bunch of a bunch of metrics. And I mean, if you want to use your metrics, iron those things out before you go with them nationally, because those things were a disaster, let me tell you.
Are you a big NBA fan?
Yeah, I'm pretty much all sports. So yeah. I like the Timberwolves, and you know I kind of like the Nuggets too. But I mean those are some wacky picks, and yeah. It's weird to have a national publication endorsing such weird stuff. And they just they ran numbers, and those are the numbers they got.
You heard that Kevin Love, I guess, out in two months or so.
Yeah, it's too bad. I'm a big fan of Love because I'm a UCLA grad, so I'm a. I've been a fan of his way back when.
Are my Grizzlies going to do anything this year, do you think?
Probably not, but, I mean, they got some talent there. I mean, they had a good run in the playoffs the other year. So, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked, but, I mean, I think there's a lot of competition out there.
I'm going to miss O.J. Mayo. I always like having mercurial shooting guards who are, like, super hot and cold, but every time they make a three-pointer, act like, you know, they're the biggest thing in the shower.
Yeah, well, luckily there are plenty of those to go around in the NBA, so another one will come along.
How about you, Alex? Anything on your mind?
You know, just like the dark cloud of O.J. Mayo's leaving Memphis and going to Dallas, there was a dark cloud that hung over the national season, and that was Steven Strasburg, who got benched earlier this year. And the Nationals really could have used him because this past weekend they had an epic collapse at home to the St. Louis Cardinals, the defending World Series champions. It was just a heartbreaking loss. I'd actually gone to bed, and I didn't finish watching the game, but then to wake up the next morning expecting to hear the Nationals moving on to the second round, instead you hear St. Louis had this epic comeback, and they're advancing, and the Nationals, the first time making the playoffs, they're going home, and Strasburg sat on the bench throughout it all. It was kind of a rough ending to a year, which has been a rough kind of full year knowing the Strasburg situation, and you never promised to go back to even to the playoffs. So very unfortunate collapse by the Nationals.
I imagine that the Nationals fans listening to the show are throwing up all over themselves that someone compared their collapse to O.J. Mayo. but it was awful. I live in the D.C. area, and people are still flying their flags at half mast. So that was pretty awful. RG3 made them feel better this past weekend, though.
Yeah, that was a hell of a run. I'm a Nationals fan, too, so I was also disappointed by it. I think the thing that frustrates me is, like, I can understand the decision to shut down Strasburg, but if you've been following, like, the local media here, there's been such arrogance about the decision, where it's like, if you don't agree with this decision, you're a fool, and you don't care about his arm falling off, and blah, 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 blah. And it's annoying to see a decision which, to me, was, a very difficult decision to be made, and the local media and the local executives have tried to sort of poo-poo the people that have been down on it, which I don't think is fair, given the nature of the situation.
Yep. I agree. Now, don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can also email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions we'd like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Now, until next time, I am David.
And this is Alex.
And thank you so much, Todd, for being here today. It was really fun having you on the show.
Absolutely. My pleasure, guys.
We hope you've enjoyed the program. And by the way, Alex, I thought it was awesome you did get that Rougeau's theme song correct. that's my takeaway from the show. I was pretty impressed by that.
Way to rub it in at the end, David. You won.
We'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.